The Monty Show, Friday, October 19th, 2018. Hi, Jake.
Hello.
How are you, little buddy?
Doing amazing.
I'm doing amazing as well because David Freese led off Game 6 of the NLCS with a home run against Wade Miley.
Lit.
Screw you, Craig Counsell.
Instant karma.
Loved it. And that Manny Machado struck out, so I'm having a great first inning. I love it. We have got picks galore for you. Undefeated last week in college football. We're hooking you up this week as well. Big games. Michigan, Michigan State. Mississippi going to LSU, Oregon, Washington State, the Utes in USC. It's all good. That is straight ahead here on the Monty Show. Make sure you find us on Twitter, MONTY, the Monty Show. MONTY, the Monty Show is where you find us on Twitter. And of course, wherever you get your podcast, wherever you're listening to us, I appreciate you doing that. Jake and I work very hard to produce this show. Well, we don't work really hard.
Really hard might be a slight exaggeration.
Yeah, we put some effort into this, but, you know, anyway. I want to start with a couple of stories from around sports before we do get to our picks. Obviously, I think the Lakers are still front and center for a good bit of the population here in this country. What did you think of LeBron and the Lakers? I thought it was amazing they scored 63 points in the first half and didn't hit a three.
Yeah, I thought they looked pretty good for the first game. I thought that their struggle really was not having a big man in the middle, and I thought Lonzo is still struggling. I think he's still trying to find himself. I mean, there's a lot of hype around, well, he put on muscle, the shot's fixed, or the shot looks better. You know, however you want to phrase that. And I still think I see the same hesitation I saw last year. I will say that I really like the fact that he was able to bully some people last night physically. That was really nice to see. I think that's a huge improvement in his game. But overall, I just think they're not a 60-point first half kind of team. That's not who they're going to be. I think they're much more of like 40 points will be kind of their average where they hang out in the first half. And I think they really need to figure out how to come together as a unit. And this is what I've been saying. For the first 20 games, this team is going to have to figure it out. It's one thing to put out tape and practice and look cool and all that stuff. It's a different thing to go out on the floor against an opponent who studied you and knows how to beat you and do something about it and actually beat them. So I think it's going to take some time, but I think they will look good.
Well, the Lonzo thing is one of the more interesting talking points, I think, that is out there on the Lakers right now. For me, and this is just kind of my opinion alone, I think I'm probably alone on this. I think he's on the clock. I hear everybody saying that the Lakers are going to be patient with him, and I just don't see that they can afford to be patient, because how much losing can this Laker team do before you lose the room, before you lose Rondo, before you lose, you know, Lance? Because you brought all these guys here to kind of even things out. You didn't bring these guys here to lose.
Right.
And I think it's difficult for a team that has this much veteran leadership on it to lose on a consistent basis. So they're going to have to figure this rotation out. He, Lonzo, will shoot better than he shot last night. First of all, he only played 19 minutes, which was justified, because I actually thought Rajon Rondo, when he was on the floor, was their best player.
Yeah.
I mean, he played exceptionally well. He was a general. He was in control. You can see that LeBron trusts him with the ball. Like, there is a trust built up there.
Yeah.
That's very clear. The other thing that's very clear is Josh Hart is a dominant player. He scores 20 points in 27 minutes, was getting to the basket, was getting to his open spots at the arc. One of the few guards that was in the right place at the right time for a driving kick. They have talent. They're going to shoot the three better than they did last night, which was 7 of 30. They're going to be much better than that. My single biggest concern is their ability to play at that kind of pace 82 nights a year.
Yeah.
That's I'm a little concerned about. I don't know that they can do that. The other thing that was interesting today is there was a story, and I think it was one of the ESPN guys had the story about how a Cleveland Cavalier front office person made the comment that the tread is off of LeBron's tires. And they got the best out of LeBron James.
I don't buy that. I just simply don't buy it. I mean, I think this guy's going to keep going for quite some time. I think if you want to say that, you know, you had nice moments with them, that's cool. I think LeBron's best was in Miami. That's when he was most physically imposing. That was when he was at his physical peak, looked really good, was dominant. And towards the end, yeah, his body broke down. But I think when we're talking about which team got the best out of him, I don't think we can answer that question until his days are done in L.A. because I don't think, you know, just like with Kobe, you know, there was a good argument to be made that the Lakers towards the last 5 years of his career got the best Kobe Bryant because he was so mentally dialed in. He was beating you without having to work as hard. And I think that takes a special player, and LeBron is that caliber.
And I bring this up because for LeBron, it would probably be crushing to miss the postseason. For his body, if he doesn't make some long run through the postseason, I think it actually will be better for them going forward. Because LeBron's played a ton of basketball for the last 10 years. He has played at least, I got to think, he averages, what, 120-something games a year if you include Olympics? And
yeah.
It's a lot of basketball.
Yeah.
I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. And he's going to play 82 games. He's going to play 35 to 40 minutes a night. That's what he says. We'll see. I don't know what that looks like, but I don't think it's the end of the world for LeBron James, the body, the back, the legs, the knees, to miss the playoffs. I don't think they're going to miss the playoffs. So maybe the right way to say it is it'll be okay if they don't have a deep playoff run for him physically.
Yeah, and I think even if they did miss the postseason this year, I think that wouldn't necessarily be hugely disappointing because you were never going to go all the way anyway. And I'm a huge believer when you're still trying to figure out, you know, who you are as a team.
Don't say it.
I just don't think that going to the postseason may be the right thing this year.
You need playoff experience for these guys. Look how far Brandon Ingram has come. Look at him last night. Really doing the job defensively. Getting to the basket. He is a different player this year. Look at how far Josh Hart's come. Kyle Kuzma. Lonzo Ball. Those guys need playoff minutes. They need to feel that pressure because that either grows you or it crushes you. They need to feel that pressure. They need to be in that environment. So I think this team has to make the playoffs, and they will. They will. It's one game. I don't want to overreact to one game, but there's a lot of improvement that needs to be seen over the next month, over their next 10 games. There's a lot of improvement that has to happen. By the way, real quick, Damian Lillard looks like a guy that was on a mission against LeBron and the Lakers. Because nobody was talking about the Blazers. They were all talking about LeBron and the Lakers. And I think he went into that game with a point to prove, which I think he proved it. Dame's a pretty good in case you didn't know this, Dame's a pretty good basketball player.
Yeah, and I think he's going to have to go somewhere else to win. And it would be a real shame if he spent his whole career without winning. But, I mean, he may very well be one of those guys. But I've been a big-time Dame supporter. I think that he... It sucks because I love his game. I love him and McCollum together, but Evan Turner's not a good enough three to take you places. I mean, he's just simply not. And that's the toughest part. They're going to have to go and get a third to do anything.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Stauskas had a nice game, but he's not a star. It's Dame and McCollum and then everybody else on there. I'm not a Nurkic fan whatsoever. I'm just not. So yeah, I think you're right. If he wants to win titles, he's probably going to have to leave Portland. Anyway, hey, real quick before we get to our locks, the Red Sox. Your least favorite pitcher, David Price, pitched a gem in one of the most critical games of his career.
Yeah.
Redemption, like, how did that change your opinion of David Price?
Well, certainly, I think for him it was huge for in the confidence, you know, category. I think, you know, for how many outings now has he just taken a beating, you know, for not executing in the postseason. And I think finally what he was able to do is figure out how to use the changeup to speed up his fastball. They were way off balance the entire night. And I thought his location was dialed in. He commanded the inner half of the plate.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And I think that's huge. Anytime if you're a left-handed pitcher and you're not throwing 97, which he's not anymore, he's 93-ish, you've got to be on the inside corner against the right-hand pitcher.
Was that fastball any good, by the way? Yeah. I mean, just dominating.
Yeah, I mean, it was good. Dominating. But I think at the end of the day, he made a slight mechanical adjustment. I'm not exactly sure what it was, but clearly he was taking his time in his windup, that modified windup, taking his time, staying relaxed, using the least amount of energy possible, and he looked really good. I don't know what else to say about it, but what I will say is, moving forward, let's not get too high on the horse. He does need to replicate this the next time you go out. But seriously, you're capable. The problem is, the thing about, you know, failing for, you know, 5 to 10 playoff starts, which is what it is, mm-hmm. and then coming out against a team like the Astros, an offensive, I would not a juggernaut, but a really good offensive team, and dominating them like that, is now there's expectation. You're on the Boston Red Sox. You're not the ace of the team, but you're 1A. For them, you know, so now there's expectations, and really, you probably are the ace because Chris Sale's had a bit of an injury, illness, whatever you want to call it.
Eovaldi is their best pitcher, in my opinion. I mean, he's the guy's pumping fastballs at 100 miles an hour. His breaking stuff's really solid. He's coming out of the bullpen. He's starting for them. He would be my game one. I think game one's on Tuesday. He'd be my game one starter without question. I would go and. This is just my opinion. I would go Eovaldi. I would go Price, Porcello. And if I need a guy, I would go Chris Sale. I would play it by ear after that and just see, because Chris Sale's not right. His shoulder's not right. There is something wrong with that guy physically. And I think you're asking for trouble putting him in that situation. It's the World Series against probably the Dodgers, and their offense just eats. I mean, when they get going, that team just is really tough to slow down.
Yeah,
I'd start Eovaldi. That'd be my game one starter.
Yeah, and I don't even disagree with that, especially with where they're at with usage and things like that. You know, Eovaldi didn't throw a ton of pitches. He was very efficient. It was almost
just dominant.
I don't like to. I'm, by the way, one of those people who says it's not a side session if you threw it in the game. Game intensity is completely different. So he didn't throw a side session. He threw 20 pitches or whatever it was in game. I still think you bring him out for game one. Go power versus power and see what happens and go from there. I think I very much in the World Series especially, but even in the Championship Series, the game one defines where you're going to go the rest of the way. If you can win game one and you can do it in dominant fashion, you're going to cruise the rest of the series, in my belief. But we'll just have to see.
Yeah, I think, by the way, the other guy that makes me nervous, and I think the bullpen has been interesting this postseason for every team because every team has used starters as relievers.
Well, we see it every year.
Yeah, so every team has been a little different. But Craig Kimbrel makes me incredibly nervous. He's not the same pitcher he used to be, and it's cool that he hangs his throwing arm up there like he's some kind of witch doctor, whatever. It's cool you have the worst beard in baseball. But there's something not right with that guy. He finally didn't give up a run. In that save last night to close out the ALCS, but he's not been very good. I'd be very, very careful with how you use him because they have other arms in that bullpen. Joe Kelly, namely, has the stuff to be a closer. I would not hesitate to pass on Kimbrel if he continues to be shaky.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's your closer. I just think that's his role. He's not a reliever. He's a closer. I think I would agree that you have to be careful. You have to be. It's no longer an 8-inning game. That's the best way to put it. He is hittable at this point, but I think if he executes, he's not hittable. He dominated them last night. Absolutely, positively dominated them last night. And let's be honest, their spirit was broken and the game was clearly over. But they're still a threat. So I don't know. I feel a little less, you know, shook by his performances, if you know what I mean. Like, I'm not worrying about him necessarily, but I will, you know, I would say you got to watch him a little more closely. I would agree with that.
All right. So we'll keep you up to date. Obviously, I guess our next show will be Monday. Monday. I'll be in Bristol at ESPN Radio all weekend, flying back out west. I'll be
big
home.
Big timer now.
Yeah, you know, that's just
big leaguer now.
I can't help it. You know, they want me. I'm coming. Yeah. I'm going. You know. Anyway, the point is that, Monday it'll be real interesting to see who, you know, do we have a game 7 tomorrow night? I'll be on game night on ESPN Radio Saturday, and then the football frenzy on Sunday night on ESPN Radio. But it'll be real interesting to see if the Dodgers can close out the Brewers tonight in Milwaukee. Well, obviously you're here on a Friday because you want our locks. 5-0 in college football last weekend. We are red hot. We were 500 last week 1-3 in the NFL last week. Not a good week in the NFL. I've had a real bad year in the NFL. Real bad year. But this is a week we get the NFL right. I spent a lot of time on my picks this week. But let's get right to it with college football and four big games, starting with Michigan at Michigan State. The Wolverines are a 7-point favorite in this game. The number is 40. Michigan is 0-10 versus Michigan State against the spread. 0 for their last 10. Like, how can you even explain that? And you look at this matchup, Jake, obviously it's a rivalry game. You have a team in Michigan that's 6th in the country. Michigan State gets back into the top 25 at 24. 6-1 Michigan, 4-2 Michigan State. I don't think this is the same Michigan team that we've seen the last couple of years. Obviously, the Wolverines are much more balanced. They were terrible on offense last year. Like, they were an embarrassment offensively last year. That's not the case for the Wolverines this year. A balanced team on offense and defense. Michigan has a great secondary. And I think that's why they're going to wind up winning this game. Even though I think it's a one-score game, Michigan State's got the number one run defense. But I think that's also overrated.
Yes.
Because of who they've played. And I think also, if you look at Michigan State, the fact that they've been in and out of the top 25 and their loss was to Northwestern, no offense, you can't lose to Northwestern. You can't lose to what now has become a below par, very mediocre Arizona State team. I don't know. This does not feel like a great team. Is their best win at Penn State? I would think it is at this point. But I think Michigan State's a little overrated, and I think Lewerke for Michigan State is not as good as Shea Patterson, and that's why I'm taking Michigan to win 24-17.
Yeah, for me, it's going to be all about the Michigan run game. I think you talk about that Michigan State defense and the run defense they bring. If you're Michigan and you can get the run game going and you can figure out how to break that down, I think from there, only good things come with that. And I think anytime you're in a big-time rivalry game, a great environment, you know, a ton of energy, I think if you can figure out how to pound the rock, you're going to be in a great place. I agree with you. I think it's going to be a really close game. I have this 31-27. I think it'll be close the whole time. And I think overall, it will be a great game.
I'm going to stick 24-17. Michigan will win. They'll cover, and it'll go over. I think it's a big, big day for Shea Patterson. He's got to become a dominant performer in a real intense rivalry game with Michigan State. And obviously they still have Ohio State straight ahead, but this is a big day for Shea Patterson. I think he gets the job done. Let's move on to, I think, the biggest game of the day because of what's on the line this week and in the coming weeks. Number 5, LSU, Death Valley, Tiger Stadium. They're hosting Mississippi State, number 22. LSU is a 6-point favorite. The number is 45. I love this game. I my biggest concern, and this is really, for me, this is the determining factor in this game, is can LSU hold up again?
Yeah.
Because their schedule has been an absolute dogfight, and they're not even through the most difficult game on their schedule, obviously, which is Alabama coming up. But if you look at this stretch of games, it's Ole Miss, Florida, at Florida, and then Georgia at home. And they've won two of those three. They lost at the Swamp. But now it's Mississippi State. When everything is on the line, because remember, they don't leave Baton Rouge for a month, LSU, right? Because they were home last week, they're home this week, they have a bye next week, and then they're home for Alabama to open up November.
Yep.
That's a month at home. This is a critical game. It doesn't get bigger than this, because if they lose this game, the Alabama game isn't nearly as important. And I think that matters in this game. And I think ultimately what you're going to see here is that these two defenses are going to have to figure out who they really are. Because you want to talk about overrated. I think Mississippi State, and I know they're number one in the country in points allowed, and everybody gets all fired up about, you know, it's SEC football and... But let me tell you that they haven't played really anybody. No offense, Kentucky and Florida. They lost to Florida 13-6, right? That and by the way, that game was in Starkville. They lost that game at home 13-6. You know, they beat an Alabama team that scored 9 points. So is that Mississippi State or is that Auburn? I think we're going to find out tomorrow.
Yeah, I think for me, Mississippi State's a first half team. They spend all of their energy stopping you in the first half. So, you know, they've allowed only 22 points in the first half this year. None of those points were scored with touchdowns. So that's really saying something. They really are stout in the first half. And on the other side of the ball, you know, they're dominating in the run game, leading the SEC, averaging 240 yards a game on the ground. So this is a team, to me, that's really going to try to suffocate LSU in the first half. So I think if you're LSU, the keys to this game are just not getting too far behind in the first half. And it does concern me, your point about them, about Mississippi State not playing anybody, that does concern me. That creeps into this game a little bit, because I think when you're going to LSU, that environment is legit.
This is their game of the year.
I mean, this is your biggest game. Like, you got, this is your biggest game of the year. There's a ton on the line for you, a ton on the line for LSU. And I think this is going to be an absolute shootout. I think Mississippi State probably gets ahead early, but I think LSU is going to reel them in, and I think it's a shootout. I'm going to take LSU 38-31. I think it's going to be an awesome game. I think it's going to be one of those games where it's up and down the field, and it's going to be very exciting.
Well, let's get a couple of things straight here. Nick Fitzgerald, who is the starting quarterback for Mississippi State, hasn't thrown a touchdown, and I don't know how many people realize this. He has not thrown a touchdown in three straight games. He hasn't thrown a touchdown since September 15th. It's been a month.
Right.
Since that's the starting quarterback
right.
at Mississippi State. But what is he also? He's their leading rusher by a lot, and he's got seven rushing touchdowns, if you don't know. You have to contain Nick Fitzgerald. And I think LSU can do that up front. But I also think Joe Burrow is going to have to win this game for LSU. He's got no passing touchdowns in three of his last four. And that's how you're going to win this game. Joe Burrow is going to have to throw the football for LSU to win. And I think LSU's defense is going to sit back and they're going to wait for Nick Fitzgerald to try and run the football.
Yeah.
Because he's not going to beat you throwing it.
Yeah.
And that's why LSU is going to win this game handily. They're going to double up Mississippi State. 30-14, LSU is going to win, cover, and it's going to go under the 45, I hope. Because I could also see a scenario where Nick Fitzgerald breaks LSU's spirit with big runs or...
Well, and that's going to be my question. I mean, anytime you're playing a running quarterback, I mean, we've seen this at both, you know, the college level and the NFL level. Anytime you're playing a running quarterback, the question is, can you pound him when you get the opportunity? Because there is always opportunity with running quarterbacks, because inevitably what they do is they make the wrong choice and they want to play hero ball and they want to try to run over a cornerback who's a lot stronger than they are. So I think they're going to have to try and pop Fitzgerald and teach him a little bit of a lesson. And if they do that, I think they'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm going to stick and stay 30-14. I'm really confident. I looked at a lot of metrics in this game, a lot of the matchups, similar opponents, you know, stylistically. I just think LSU's defense is built to stop guys like Nick Fitzgerald. What about Oregon, the red-hot Oregon Ducks, the up-and-coming team in the Pac-12? They're number 12 in the country, and they're going to Pullman to take on Washington State, the 25th-ranked team in the country. And Oregon's offense is unbelievable. You know, they're number two in the Pac-12 in rushing yards per game at 209, passing yards a game at 273, offense, total offense at 483. They're number one in 43 points per game. And really, do you realize that the number one team in most of those categories is Washington State? Because Gardner Minshew has had an unbelievable season. The starting quarterback at Washington State is the national leader in passing. I mean, in six games, he's got 2,400 yards, 19 touchdowns, yet we haven't even talked about Herbert yet. And the fact that he's going for 268 yards a game, he's got 17 touchdowns and only five picks against a really difficult schedule. This is going to be an amazing, amazing game.
Yeah, I think, again, this is just going to be another classic. I think every time we're talking about Oregon, we're constantly talking about a high-scoring game, whether it's, you know, against Washington or against Stanford. You know, they lost a close game against Stanford, won a close game against Washington. And I feel like, you know, with going to Washington State's going to be tough. There's no question about it. Washington State has won its last 10 in a row at home. There's a reason for that. And I think when you look at this game, it's going to be another Pac-12 classic. It's going to to be a high-scoring game. It's going to be a shootout. And I think if you're Oregon, it can't just be the Justin Herbert show. It can't just be all about him. You got to get C.J. Verdell going. He has got to have a big game. You got to get – I think ideally if you're Washington, you've got to get the play-action game going, because I think that Washington State defense is good enough that if you're playing one-dimensional football, they will shut you down. I don't think it's going to be a low-scoring game or anything, but it would be ideal if you could get that play action going. You could fool them a little bit. That would be really nice. I think this is going to be an absolute shootout. I have this as a high-scoring game. I think Oregon's going to win late with a field goal. I got this 48-45 Oregon.
C.J. Verdell has had three straight 100-yard games in four out of five. His only 100-yard game didn't come against San Jose State in those five games, and he only had 15 carries. And I'm just not that worried about the way that Oregon scores. The Ducks' offense is back. Yeah. There's no question about that. Can they stop what I think is one of the most prolific offenses in the country at throwing the football? And my feeling is they cannot. And I think Washington State is going to pull the upset here. They're at home. It's a letdown game. It's absolutely a trap game for Oregon. There's no doubt about that. They have fought tooth and nail. They have had so many games, and obviously that Washington game, and I'm pointing at the Washington game and the Stanford loss. You've had these emotional swings. You're going from Washington to Washington State, and that might seem like an easy trick to turn. It's not. It really is not. And that's why Washington State's going to win this game. I agree with you. It's a shootout, 42-38. And I can't believe I'm saying it. They're going to go way over the 68-point number.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting 80 in this. It's over. And really, I know that Washington State's a three-point favorite. And I think they cover it. This is a win cover over for Washington State, 42-38.
Yeah, I'm stoked for this game. I mean, this is just going to be I think these are the kind of games when we talk about, you know, the future for quarterbacks, that, you know, you talk about the future for guys going to the NFL. Herbert isn't exactly the guy that's all about going to the NFL. The guy, I don't know how many people realize this. This guy has a degree in being a doctor. Like, this guy is that freaking intelligent. Not everybody's good enough to be a doctor. So I'm just saying, this guy's got options on the table. This is one of those games where if he can go out and prove it, that's going to say a lot, and I think that's going to really help him. So I'm telling you, he's going to have a big game, and I can't wait.
Do you understand how good Minshew is?
Oh, I'm sure he's great, but I think Oregon's got a lot to prove. They're on a path. They've got to win this game. If they have any chance at the Pac-12, they've got to win this game.
But do you understand that look at Washington State? They're in a more must-win situation because people don't respect them. People have looked at Washington State, and they said, oh, well, they lost to SC, but – they beat Utah. They pounded Oregon State. And I agree with you, and this is the one thing that worries me. Utah's their best opponent because they've played Wyoming and San Jose State and Eastern Washington. They lost to USC at USC. They beat Utah at home, and they pounded Oregon State. And now they're going into the meat of the Northern schedule, which is Oregon, Stanford, and Cal. So one of us is going to be proven right. Maybe Washington State gets exposed against a red-hot Oregon team. Who knows? We'll find out. I like Washington State 42-38. It's going to be a fun game to watch.
Yeah.
Let's end our college locks with Utah hosting USC. Jack Tuttle transferred. And I know he's a true freshman. I know he's never played. And people are freaking out. And I think it's a big deal that Tuttle left Utah.
Yeah,
I think this is a very big deal. But I also think it might be a rallying point for the Utes. USC's got all kinds of problems. Obviously, they're without Porter Gustin. The homecoming that is not going to happen. Porter, obviously, from Salem. All those controversies with Bronco Mendenhall. And that they don't have any more linebacker scholarships for Porter Gustin. And we get it. Porter Gustin wanted to be a BYU Cougar. And it didn't happen. So what did he do? He went to USC. He blew up. He's one of the best pass rushers in the country. He's a team captain, and now he's got a broken ankle, and he's not even going to play at Utah. And I think that's a big, big deal. If Utah wins, how will they do it?
Yeah, I think if Utah wins, it's going to be all about the quarterback play. I mean, we've constantly talked about how this Utah team just relies heavily on that defense, and for good reason. I mean, they're the best defense in the country. I mean, that's awesome. But at some point, you have to put an emphasis on executing on offense. Tyler Huntley has to be better. Tyler Huntley has to throw the ball down the field. I mean, you can't have simply 7 yards in attempt and think you're going to win a ton of games in college football. That needs to be closer to 9, 10, 11 yards in attempt during this game. I mean, I think you've got to.
In the South, for sure.
Yeah, and especially in a time when USC doesn't have great linebacker play because of the injuries, I think you have to expose that.
Well, that's a good point, because Cam Smith's not nearly 100%.
Not nearly 100%. And so I think, you know, for this game specifically, if you were to look at their schedule at the beginning of the year, you would have said, well, this is going to be a real tough game for Tyler Huntley, because SC's got all this linebacker talent. He's a 7 yard an attempt kind of guy, which is right in the wheelhouse of the linebackers.
Underneath, yep.
Now that's not the case. There's a lot of injuries with the linebackers. I think he needs to be around 9 or 10 yards an attempt, just short of the safeties, just past the linebackers, and he'll be in great shape. And they will, in my opinion, win this game because it is at home, and I think this is a statement game. You want to beat SC at home. So for me, I think this will be a 27-21 win for Utah.
No kidding. I'm going to take Zach Moss. I don't know if people can hear that. Those are Air Force jets flying over our house.
I was like, what in the hell?
Wow, that's crazy. I think Zach Moss is going to have a huge night. He's the key to them winning this game. They say the ankle's finally good. Moss is ready 100%. To go. If that's the case, I think Utah's a very different offense. That really helps Huntley. And I also think this defense is elite. And by the way, does Britton Covey get a touchdown pass this week? Because he has been, the two passes he's thrown have been out of this world. So I love that Utah is creative on offense. I love that this game's at home. And I think they realize that SC is a gateway to the top of the Pac-12 South. Because if Utah wins this game, you can now see an avenue where they can win the South.
Yeah.
I think there's so much on the line. I'm going to take the Utes to win 30-20. They're going to win, they're going to cover, and it's going to go over the 48.
Solid. Big Utes guy this week. What did you pick again? Big Utes guy this week. I picked 27-21 Utah.
Yeah, we're all in on the Utes this week. I love them against SC. So here are our college football locks. We're taking Michigan to beat Michigan State 24-17. That game is in East Lansing. I think this is a big week for Shea Patterson. I've got LSU handling Mississippi State handily at home. Death Valley, number 5 LSU, wins 30-14. That game, I think that means they win, they cover, and it goes under, by the way. Oregon at Washington State. I've got Washington State. I just think Minshew at home is too much. I think this is a trap game for Oregon after their big win. 42-38, 80 points pushes it over the number.
Hell yeah.
I think, this is a win, cover, and it goes over for Washington State. And then I've got the Utes beating SC 30-20, win, cover, and over. By the way, before we get to our NFL locks, the Milwaukee Brewers are pounding Hyunjin Ryu. It is 4-1 in the top of the second. But then again, the Dodgers have runners on first and third with two outs for Miley, who doesn't nearly look like the same dominant pitcher he's been. And I'm telling you, Craig Counsell messing with him.
Yeah.
And that last game was a mistake. But here nor there, it doesn't matter because you're not going to hear this show probably until this game is over. So here nor there. Let's get to our National Football League locks. Let's start with the Bears. I should be upbeat about the Bears. I should feel good about Mitchell, the Hall of Fame, class of 2031, Mitchell Trubisky. But I don't. I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid, and I don't know why. So let's talk about Mitch real quick. I don't know why I can't just go in head over heels, man. Why can I not just sell out on Mitchell Trubisky? I don't like red zone interceptions. I don't like hesitation. I don't like the fact that Matt Nagy is a terrible play caller who clearly does not trust Mitchell Trubisky with the football.
Would you?
I think I probably would, because what has Mitchell Trubisky done this year? Well, he's gotten significantly better. But I'm also the same guy who says, if you're a rookie quarterback, You've either got it or you don't. It's why I firmly believe that Sam Darnold is not going to be a star. He throws too many interceptions. He turns the ball over too much. It hurts you. It means you cannot be a franchise-level quarterback when you constantly turn the football over. And I know that guys like Brett Favre did it a lot. And he was a Hall of Famer. He's one of the best to ever play. There's nothing about Mitchell Trubisky that says that he's a Brett Favre caliber quarterback. Is he a great athlete? Yes, he can run. He runs for purpose. He runs for panic. I get it. But I just don't see the star power yet. I don't. And I know he's completing 70% of his passes. I know he's one of the top 10 rated quarterbacks in the NFL. I just don't buy in yet. Do you?
Not quite. I think he's got the tools to be that guy. But I think at the end of the day, as it always does, it's coming down to the mental side of the game for him. There's too many times when he's throwing it to Tariq Cohen on the other side of the field across his body, and it's asking to be picked off. And yes, this is what I said when we were talking Utes. Again, I feel like I'm on a pattern tonight. This guy's only throwing the ball for 7 yards an attempt. That's not going to be good enough in the NFL to win games. This is a passing league. This is a Drew Brees-style league.
They're living on yards after the catch.
Yeah, for sure. And eventually that will come to an end. I mean, eventually, and it'll come to an end this week. The Patriots are very disciplined, very good tackling team. And I think anytime you're going to do that, you're not going to be able to throw the ball to Cohen in the flat and think he's just going to beat guys. That's not going to happen this week. So I think when you're playing a team the caliber of the Patriots and you're Mitchell Trubisky, you have to make the correct decision. And sometimes the correct decision is throwing it away. Sometimes it's not playing hero ball. And sometimes throwing that ball away in that moment will lead to better opportunities down the line.
Correct. Correct. And let's talk about his weapons a little bit. He's got two legitimate running backs in Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen, who are both weapons. He's got, I think, four receiving targets that are 100% available to him on every route. They get open, whether that's Taylor Gabriel, who's emerging as a star, Allen Robinson. Again, anytime Tariq Cohen's out in the pattern, he is open. And then Trey Burton.
That's the guy I always go to. The guy is absolutely always open.
He's his emergency hatch.
Yeah, I mean, he's the reason he is that guy is because he's a big target. He's a tight end. He's got that athletic ability for a big man. And I think in this game specifically, you know, you've got to be able to target him. He's got to be able to catch the ball, you know, on an 8-yard out route and then turn it up the field and run somebody over. That's what he needs to do in this game. I mean, I think that will be absolutely vital to their success.
Yeah, if you can get Jordan Howard a receiving touchdown out of the backfield, because I don't think you're going to be able to run consistently on this Patriot front seven. I think that's huge. And then on the defensive side of the ball, I think Kyle Fuller versus Josh Gordon is absolutely a matchup you have to win. And then Roquan Smith versus Rob Gronkowski. Roquan's got to be able to stay with Gronk. Now, there's no question that Roquan can run with Gronkowski. Yeah. Yeah. No question about that. But you do not, in my opinion, lock up Rob Gronkowski man-to-man.
No,
you're going to have to get help there, and we'll see how they do that. But Roquan can cover Rob Gronkowski. But I don't like this matchup. I don't, and I'm a big believer in metrics, and I look at the filtered numbers that PFF puts out, and this Patriot defense.
Pro football talk.
Pro football focus.
Focus, sorry.
PFF is different than PFT.
My bad. Sorry, a lot of letters.
Sorry, Mike Florio. The Patriots are fourth on Pro Football Focus's defensive numbers. They're number three against the run. They're number two in coverage.
Yeah.
These are all things that Mitchell Trubisky is going to have to deal with. The one saving grace for him as far as he and his quarterback numbers, he will complete a lot of passes underneath. But you have guys on that Patriot defense that can run. You have guys like Kyle Van Noy is a perfect example of this. Kyle Van Noy probably only works in Bill Belichick's defense. Oh, there he is. Bill Belichick is the other reason that I don't love this matchup for the Bears. I think they're going to score a lot of points. I think both these teams are going to score a lot of points in this game. But I'm going to take the Patriots, and they're a three-point favorite for a reason. 33-27, the Patriots beat the Bears. They're going to win. They're going to cover, and it's going to go over the 49.
Well, that's funny. I had a 35-28, so we're in like. Ooh. We're in like on this.
So
one.
You like the Pats?
Yeah, I like the Pats in this one. And I think at the end of the day, anytime you're facing Tom Brady, the X factor of him late in the game comes into play. I mean, I just
ask
can't.
Ask the Chiefs.
Exactly. I just can't will myself to say, yeah, Trubisky's going to outplay Brady. You know, Mac's going to get to Brady, which I'm not even sure that will happen because I think Brady will be getting rid of the ball too quickly. I just think there won't be enough time for him to get there. So at the end of the day, I'm counting on Brady to have a good performance, and I think Josh Gordon will win that matchup. So
yeah, Kyle Fuller has always made me nervous. We've talked about this, and I know that people have a lot of respect for that Bears secondary and what they're able to do, but I just don't love this matchup. And
yeah,
it's more that I worry about the turnovers coming from Trubisky than I do about, you know, Patriot offense, whatever.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting. So I'm going to take the Pats 33-27. I think one of the most intriguing matchups of the day is the Saints at the Ravens. The Ravens are a 2.5-point favorite in this game. This is another one of those things that we talked about where you have to wonder, okay, so everybody's saying that the Ravens defense has gotten fat against some offenses that haven't been great. And I don't think that I agree with that. I look at this Ravens team and their wins. Yes, they've had the Bills, they've had the Broncos, and they've had the Browns, but they lost that game to the Browns. Now, granted, the Browns only scored 12 points in that game. I get it. But they have also given up a lot of points to, you know, a team like Pittsburgh, who scored 14 points on them. You know, you gave up 34 points to the Bengals. The question to me is, do those couple of good teams they played outweigh their 21-0 win over the Titans? I don't think it does.
Yeah.
I think this Ravens defense is a little overrated based on the fact that their road games have been real storytellers. That game at Pittsburgh that they won handily 26-14 was a real interesting grinded out rivalry game, I felt like.
Yeah.
And I think they grew out of that. But then the next week they had a real letdown game against the Browns, and they haven't been tested since. I think this is this is one of those games for the Ravens. They're going to turn around and they're going to circle this on their schedule when the year's over.
Yeah.
And if they wind, let's say they wind up missing the playoffs, they're going to circle this on their schedule and they're going to say, because they lost to the Saints. And I think the Saints are going to win this game. And I think it's a matter of injuries. Baltimore's secondary versus Drew Brees is not a good matchup right now. Because Levine, Everett, and Carr are all far less than 100%. Levine hasn't played a month. Their secondary's not healthy. And I think Drew Brees is having one of the best seasons of his career, and there are some who feel like this is a historic year for Drew Brees.
Yeah, I mean, Drew Brees is always going to do Drew Brees, right? I mean, we can talk about his numbers being, I mean, he's an underrated fly under the radar Hall of Famer at this point. I mean, and you know,
I disagree. Why is everybody saying that this week? Drew Brees,
he flies under the radar. He is never talked about in the ilk of the Rodgers, the Brady. He just never is. I mean, he's just not.
I disagree. I think Drew Brees is widely regarded as one of the best quarterbacks in the history of the NFL. I would agree that he's not up there with the likes of, you know, a Brett Favre is somebody that people
he
think is one of
the best.
He doesn't
win the popularity vote. That's the problem.
Because he's low key.
Exactly.
He's not out there. He's not flamboyant.
Yeah.
But what Drew Brees is doing this year, completing 78% of his passes, what Drew Brees is doing at 1,658 yards already, 318 yards a game. Like, there's not a number that you don't like about him.
Yeah, and look, we're on the same page with Drew Brees. I love the guy. I think he performs. I think he gives you reliability, consistency,
discipline. How many interceptions has he thrown?
None.
Zero. Doesn't turn the ball over.
I know he doesn't turn the ball over, but I think this team... The interesting thing about the Saints is this team tends to really, when they play outside, they really start relying on Kamara a lot. And for good reason. I get that. I think this game specifically will be all about Kamara's ability to get out into the flat and beat guys one-on-one. If he does that, they're going to have a huge day. Now, if he doesn't do that, it's going to be a lot closer. And I feel like this game will surprise some people with how close it is. This game feels like, to me, I initially had it 31-30, real close, razor-thin kind of game, but I'm going to go 31-27 Saints. I think they win by a little bit, and I think you're right. This is a game where the Ravens will probably feel like they should have won the game, but at the end of the day, the Saints will win this game.
Yeah, Saints will win it 31-27. That's the number I've got. They win it. It goes over the 49.5. I have a total of 58, as you do. I just think the Saints are too loaded. Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara, Benjamin Watson. I just think they have all these weapons now that have really, they've turned into this high-powered offense. And I really like where the Saints are at. I think this game here is an interesting game of sorts. It's the Bengals at the Chiefs. The Chiefs are a 6-point favorite. The number in this game is massive. It's the biggest number of the week at 58.5 is the number. Bengals at the Chiefs. Both teams lost late. Cincinnati got their hearts broken by Pittsburgh with Antonio Brown's touchdown down in the middle of the field, like that 30-yard run. Kansas City and New England had a massive shootout that was wildly entertaining. But here's why the Chiefs win this game. They've scored 38 points in 4 of their 6 games. Kansas City only gives up 20.5 points at home. And I just don't know what Cincinnati is on a week-to-week basis. And I certainly don't believe that the Bengals can go into Arrowhead against a bleeding Chiefs team that's looking for redemption, that has weapons all over the field. And I still think, and I know that everybody likes to talk about how explosive and the weapons that Patrick Mahomes has, and Hill is blazing fast, and Kelsey's his best weapon.
Yep.
And I know that Kareem Hunt is legit and Tyreek Hill is absolutely blazing fast. I think Travis Kelce is an incredible, incredible weapon in the NFL. He's very difficult to match up against. He admits that he does not block ever, and which makes him a wide receiver, much less of a tight end. And I think he's going to have a big, big game. I love, love, love Kansas City by 10. 34-24, which is only 58. And I love that, because there's no way they're covering 58.5 points in the NFL.
Yeah,
don't think it's happening.
For me, this number one, I'm not a big Bengals guy. Well documented on the show. I'm not. I don't believe in Andy Dalton. I think
you wish that he would get hit by a bus.
You're a redhead on an orange team. I mean, come on, bro. Get over it.
That's
like
called synergy.
So no. Anyway, Patrick Mahomes to Travis Kelce is true synergy. I don't think this is really going to be all that close. I think when you look at the Chiefs' performance against the Patriots, they had that game. In my opinion, they should have won the game, and yes, they didn't. And I would agree with you, whether you want to say they're bleeding or they're hungry, I would even say they're starving at this point, because they should have won that game. I think they're going to win this handily. I got it 35-21 Chiefs.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just – okay. Yeah, I'm not going to overthink it. I overthink the NFL so much.
Mm-hmm.
It has been a year of games that just have not ended the way they were supposed to end. And so I'm not going to overthink it. I'm truly not. And it is what it is, I guess. By the way, don't forget to catch me on ESPN Radio this weekend. I hesitate to talk about my nutrition and workout.
Why?
Well, because I bought Ghost Protein.
Smelled good. I'm trying
not to complain about it. Taste, quality, all that stuff, is there's nothing to compare.
Off the charts.
Like Ghost Protein, like peanut butter cereal milk, is amazing.
Fire.
It's amazing. It took a week to get the product to my house. I ordered it a week ago. And it's not cheap. Okay, it is not cheap at all. So I walk into Costco when I find out, hey, I ordered 3 to 5 days shipping. And they're like, oh yeah, but we didn't ship it out until Monday night. So technically the first day is Monday. It's 3 to 5 days when they ship it. So I paid extra and it took longer. And it's really frustrating. I hate bad customer service. So my question is, I go to Costco and I get Optimum Nutrition whey isolate. What is it? I think it's double chocolate is the flavor.
Yeah, I think it's chocolate. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
I don't even think it was worth it. I think it's a 2-pound bag. That's an awesome product. I don't think I'll ever order Ghost Protein again all over their shipping process. Am I being an idiot about it?
No, I don't think you're being an idiot about it. I think anytime you're talking about purchasing things, especially when we buy everything online nowadays for the most part, I think when you talk about the fact that you can go to Costco and get your protein on demand, you know, because you're already going once a week probably, so yep. Just get it, you know? I think there's no question. That would piss me off too, frankly. 3 to 5 day shipping says to me, I ordered it today, it'll be here in 3 to 5 days. That's what that says to me. It's not 3 to 5 days from the day you ship it out.
It's not 7 days later.
Yeah, I mean, that's just not how it works. And so that's why I say I don't feel like Ghost Protein. Number one, you've seen more result with it than I have, but you've also used it a lot more than I have. I've been on Optimum for a long time, and I love their stuff. And for the most part,
I love Optimum Nutrition.
For the most part, we use strictly Optimum Nutrition. Yeah. Everything else is Optimum Nutrition. So I just think overall, I like the experience with Optimum, but I think from a efficiency standpoint, Ghost is probably not worth it at the end of the day. It's probably not quite worth it.
I agree. The shipping thing really, and maybe I'm just spoiled because I either order it on Amazon, like I can get Optimum Nutrition, it's called Hydroway.
Mm-hmm.
I can get that tomorrow. I can order it right now on Amazon Prime. It'll be at my door tomorrow.
Yeah, well, that's Amazon.
Right?
Yeah.
I can go to, like I said, Costco and get a 2-pound pouch of it right now. So there's just it just really bothered me. So the guy delivered it today. It finally got here, and it really pissed me off. Like, you know, like I almost feel bad saying that, but I almost wanted to reject that shipment and just send it back. That's where I was at this point with it, but that's probably
foolish,
right?
Yeah, that's too far.
Yeah, that's probably
dumb. That's too far.
Yeah. Yeah, by the way, and I'm not even kidding. What is the text message I just got saying?
Yeah. Yeah, it says you ordered from Ghost. Your order from Ghost has been delivered.
Yeah. I just got that. It was delivered 3 or 4 hours ago. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I just think when it comes to customer service like that, that's just, you got to let that go to a certain point. Once you, this is what I always end up saying. You can only, and listen, people, listen, Monty observers. You know, you have to understand that you can only spend so much of your life being frustrated.
Yeah.
Like, figure it out.
Like how to play the music, right?
Hello. Hello.
Make sure you find me on Twitter, The Monty Show. MONTY, The Monty Show. Life is too short to be annoyed with shipping.
Yes.
Very true. I'll stop because I'm annoyed with shipping, so I should be telling myself that.
Yeah.
My wife always says, you have to have a positive attitude.
You do.
I do have a positive attitude. You're right. Thanks, Jake. Find me on Twitter, The Monty Show. MONTY, The Monty Show. Say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.